Welcome to the Garden Talk podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. Hey, what's up, everybody? For those of you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It. You're tuned into the Garden Talk podcast. This is episode number 127. In this episode, I interview Josh from Elite Cut Genetics. He's a plant breeder from the Chicagoland area and has been gardening since 2011. He has a ton of good knowledge when it comes to plant breeding and is big into taking an ethical approach. He talks all about how to be ethical when breeding and some big mistakes that are often made. If you want to see short clips of these podcast episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I show the plants that I've grown. Both of those channels will be linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to Seedsman for sponsoring this episode. Go to seedsman.com, pick yourself up some amazing genetics, and use the discount code MrGrowIt, AC Infinity. Check out their all-in-one pH pen, which measures pH, EC, TDS, and temperature. The sensor probe is replaceable, and it comes with storage solution and calibration solutions. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their all-in-one pH pen, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. Stash Blend consists of several ingredients in one, so you no longer have to buy individual bottles. It includes corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. It can be used in addition to your synthetic base nutrients or be used in living soil systems. Simply mix it into water and water your plants with it. You can get it at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk podcast. Today I am joined with Josh from Elite Cut Genetics. How are you doing today?
How's it going, Chris? And how's it going to the community?
Doing pretty good, man. Happy to have you on here today. It's been a while since I had a breeder on here. It's been quite some time. It's always good conversations when we're talking about plant breeding, because there's so many different avenues you can go down, so much we can get into. In this particular episode, we're going to talk about breeder ethics. We're also going to talk about mistakes that breeders make and get into some controversial topics when it comes to breeding. And so I'm really excited for this one. But before we get deep into it, can you do an introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into gardening.
All right. I'm Josh, founder of Elite Cut Genetics, breeder from the Chicagoland area. And when I first got into the plant we all know and love, started reading a lot about it from like the Jorge Cervantes book. He had, you know, the Grow Bible, or I think it was called the Grow Bible. And he also had a box set, like DVD, for like setting up rooms. Like it was like, I think, a 2 or 3 DVD set. So I had all that. I think that was around like 2007, 2008, and started really just like kind of just reading about it and just kind of like getting into it. But didn't really start until, the 2011, which was, you know, that summer. So, you know, back then it was highly illegal. You know, you couldn't really have like what we have now, how we can be talking, have a community, you know, community of growers who can all like talk, share genetics. It was very hush hush, you know, like, so, but me and my best friend, we were both reading this together, always hanging out, you know, from childhood. So like he was in it with me, you know, me and him talked about it. We wanted to do it for years basically. And then that year, 2011, we decided to start a guerrilla garden. So we went into the forest. I got seeds from Attitude Seed Bank, you know, back in the day. They sent it in like a t-shirt, you know, and it was all sketch to like try to order seeds and genetics, you know, and there wasn't really access like there is now. Like you had to order basically from the European guys who were running it. So like we had like the Barney's Farm, Dinafem. And we had like the blue hash plant, California hash plant, Critical Plus, Vanilla Kush, and actually the first ever autoflower. See, looking back, it's crazy because it's came so far with autoflowers. But back then it was a new thing. And it was like, oh, hey, we can get an extra harvest in the middle of summer. So we had the original lowrider seeds, which are the first ever autoflowers ever made. So we had those, we had like the ones I just mentioned. So we had like 3 different patches out there, man. And one was lowriders, then we had like another patch of like 5 over here. and another patch over here, you know, and learning from the book and the DVDs, it was like, you know, never take the same path twice, you know, don't be talking. So every time we went out there, it was like a mission, you know, we'd be like we're in the army or something, giving hand signals, listening, going out there. And that's when we did it. And it was a lot of work, I can tell you that, you know, lugging soil out there, you know, it turned into a huge undertaking. But we had a creek there out in the woods, so we had water access nearby. It was a forest preserve. There was really no one, you know, going through there besides, like, there's, like, a couple of ranches where guys on horseback go through on, like, the horse trails. But that was basically it. So we were out there, and that same summer, I actually got raided. So, you know, like many of us in those days, you know, got in trouble for working with the plant. So, yeah, so that was August 15th, 2011. So, okay, that puts us, like, right when the plants start flowering, right? So now we have all this stuff out there. Now I'm in trouble, okay? So they got me with, you know, I think it was around, like, six pounds or something like that. But, yeah, so now I need money for lawyers, you know, they got me for a lot, and now I don't have, like, ways to bring the funds back in. So now we're, like, committed to this thing, like, okay, I gotta finish this now. Now it's not just, like, a want or, like, a need, like, this is a need now, like, I gotta finish this, we gotta figure this out. So, yeah, it was wild, man, like, trying to go out there and harvest, which was another whole thing that took way longer than I thought, you know, going out there, like, okay, I'll hack off the branches, it'll be good. Go out there, and, like, I couldn't even cut the stalk. It was like, you know, a pop can. You know, I thought I had, like, the nice clippers. It would be good. But no, so I'm just, like, doing the branches, just leaving the main stalk, you know, just, you know, stuffing them in bags. And then my buddy would come down, pick me up, throw it in the trunk. I had to take multiple trips. So, you know, and this whole time, obviously, I'm like, paranoid and freaking out because, you know, I didn't cooperate with the police. So the next day, you know, I bonded out $8,000, and as soon as I left, they were tailing me. They're already at my mom's house, which, you know, they just found out who is related to me, and they're already waiting because they're like, this dude's gotta grow somewhere, he's got the house. They found notes, you know, they didn't know what it pertained to. There was some stuff in the works, but it just never happened because of that. But so yeah, 2011, we did it, and you know, we pulled it off. You know, we harvested them. You know, we had to involve, like, a couple other people, like my girlfriend's brother and his friend, because now I couldn't have this stuff around, you know? Like, I was looking at, you know, 6 to 8 years as a 20-year-old kid. So, I mean, that really, that's traumatic. It's definitely traumatic. But, you know, at that time, it was like, man, I got to do this now. I got lawyer fees, all this. And so we did it. You know, it was successful, had to, you know, involve a couple other people, so we broke them off too, but we had all this bud, you know, and it was, you know, it was great. Like I said, the blue hash, the Cali hash plant, vanilla kush, and all those old school, like, European breeders, like Barney's Farm and Dinafem, and, like, the freebies you'd get from Attitude, you know, whatever, planted some of those too, but those were, like, the main ones I can remember growing out there. And then, so after that, pretty much took, like, a 10-year hiatus off of anything, you know, plant-related, because it was a good 3 or 4 years of just, you know, fighting in court for my freedom. You know, they took cars, you know, laptops, TVs, they just clear you out, especially when you're not cooperating. It's like, they're going to make an example of you and mock you, you know, while you're sitting there, you know, cuffed up, whatever. So then I was living in California for a few years, wasn't doing anything with cultivation. But we know COVID happened, you know, a lot of people started getting laid off. And at the time, my girlfriend was pregnant with our first son. So I'm originally from the Chicagoland area. And so we moved back for family support. And when I moved back, you know, the laws were different. It was a completely different time. So, like, instantly, I was like, let's go, you know. And I started growing, and very quickly just started doing more. Before 6 months were up, I was already crossing stuff, you know, making feminized crosses, nothing that I released, just experience, just building it, just, you know, just getting the hang of it and seeing what comes out on the other end, and, you know, checking out the progeny to see what they express and all that. And, you know, picked up some small lighting deals right around then too. Spider Farmer, Viper Spectra, sending me, you know, lights to try. And yeah, man, so that's when it started. But like I said, there was a long hiatus, And we've been going pretty much since the pandemic started. I've just been going at it, man. Going at it. And just keep making connections and establishing those networks. And being around people who share passion with what I love. So it's like, you know, I love it. I really do. So it's therapeutic for me. I think a lot of people can relate. So yeah, spending time with my plants, taking care of my plants, and creating new things, you know, and seeding life around the globe, you know, when you're sending seeds out to different countries and all over the United States, you know, they're growing these out and getting to see those pictures and just knowing that that's happening all over, and, you know, your help spreading that. And to me, that's an amazing feeling. So yeah, that's pretty much how it started. And yeah, man, I love it. We're going to keep going.
Man, you've been through a lot. I can only imagine. You know, a lot of people, they'll just give up after getting busted, right? But you came back to it, right? And you gained that motivation. Was it mostly just the kind of the legalization that happened within your area that kind of got you back into it and still having that love for the plant, or what?
Well, see, I've always loved gardening already. You know, my dad's instilled that on me. We've had gardens ever since I was little. You know, I got chickens now. You know, I love plants. My grandmother, like, we used to go, like, get, like, cool, fancy house plants. And, you know, I'd get to pick out one, too. Hey, you can pick one out, too. And, you know, there'd be, like, a greenhouse where they're selling, like, all these cool plants. So I was involved with that at an early age. And basically, yeah, it's like an ultimate revenge on my past and everything that happened to me and that was taken from me at that time. And, you know, kind of being ahead of my time because, like, you know, a lot of people wanted to start up grows, and yeah, it was like the money grab. Like, yeah, money was a factor, but it was like, man, I just really wanted to do it. You know, I was had subscriptions for High Times magazines. I still got the boxes, just straight up like a 5-year subscription worth of High Times magazines getting sent to my house. So straight up big boxes of them. So yeah, man. Yeah. It was just basically like seeing that the laws are changing, seeing that the stigma is changing, and seeing that I can participate and become, like, you know, a legal business. And it just something that just felt right. It was just like a calling to me. And so, like, I was doing it on the side for a few years before I launched Elite Cut. So, like, basically I launched Elite Cut on Instagram. I think it was like December 22nd, 2022. So right at the end of 2022. So basically, yeah, just like over a year and a half or close to. But yeah, man. It's been a crazy journey, and it's like I said, an ultimate revenge on my past and everything that's happened to me. It's like, man, it just motivates me to just like, dude, you're on the right track. And I just felt this calling, you know, like, and it just started as an idea because I worked in warehousing. I know you've talked about, used to, you know, work at Amazon. So, you know, being a warehouse grunt, that can get old very fast, you know, loud equipment all around. And hey, you know, you have liquid, that's a Coca-Cola, not water. You can't have that. Or, you know, all these things that you deal with, and being around a lot of people who don't have like that mindset. And if you do have that entrepreneurial like mindset and you want more for yourself, you can't really connect with these people. And it's like being around these people are just going to like bring you down. You know, it's like you need to surround yourself with people who are doing things you want to do. You want to get into the rooms that you weren't in before, you know, and connect with people who are entrepreneurs or who have their own businesses, you know, like that's the circle I'm building now. And there's like a great community in the Midwest here. And I've met some amazing people, and most of them, yeah, were vendors at events. And now like I'm working with some of them, and you know, one's my photographer now doing macro shots for the flowers. So, yeah, man, it's been an amazing journey. I'm stoked to be here talking with Mr. Grow. I've been watching you too. Like, you kind of came out during the pandemic and stuff too, right? So watching all you guys, homegrown, all you guys, you know, so and I still be watching an episode. So that's just what I like to listen to while I'm working in the garden. So, yeah, man, it's been amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah, sounds like you have come a long way since you got busted. I mean, now you're all the way into doing breeding, and that's really what we're going to dive deep into today. And I want to start with ethics, okay? So there's an ethical way to go about it, and there's an unethical way to go about it. How do you define ethical breeding practices?
Okay, ethical breeding practices. So, well, you got to watch out for the guys that are just crossing stuff, packaging it, sending it out. And there's a lot of that going on. And there's a lot of, like, fake cuts going around, people passing stuff around saying, oh, this, it's this, and then they cross it, and they're saying it's this, but it's really not. or they're not testing their plants that they're crossing. So now, hop latent viroid can transfer into seed form too. So now they're sending out seed packs that are just infected, which is just going to just be horrible for the gene pool, be horrible for anyone's experience trying to grow genetics. So, I mean, really testing your mother stock, knowing the plants that you're crossing, like I understand real estate is limited sometimes. So like if you have to go on you kind of know the terpene profile or you know the cut already, but no matter what, you need to be exploring the progeny and seeing how the genetics react together, So knowing what you're starting with, for sure, verified genetics and having the clean mother stock, so testing stock regularly. And, not just crossing stuff and just sending it out there. And if you're going to sell untested gear, be upfront about what you're doing. Just be transparent and be genuine about who you are. And that's the way to go about it. Because, there's a lot of guys, white labeling. Nothing wrong with it. That's cool. They buy seeds from overseas, package them, and sell them under their brand or whatever. But, for me, I like to be hands-on with it. It's like some of these companies are getting so big, so commercialized that they're just running through gear and just dropping seed lines every month. How can you really have a true connection to what you're doing? I understand it's a business, but it starts becoming corporatized and you start losing the craft, we want to be kind of craft small batch. Some stuff we'll remake maybe if, it's selling out like crazy, but otherwise it's the seeds that are made or that's it. And once they're gone, craft small batch. Connoisseur genetics. So starting off with clean mother stock, testing your gear, being transparent about what you do and what you're bringing to the table. So, and if you're crossing other people's stuff, like we do one-off crosses too. So if you can get the same blue cookies cut that I got and you can get the same permanent marker that's going around and you cross those, well, those seeds are going to be identical. So it's like a couple different breeders might be making that same cross, So it's like it becomes more yours once you start making those selections. But there's nothing wrong with that either. But just be transparent about what you're doing and, what you're offering. And if you're conversating with me, you're going to be able to see how genuine I am. If you're talking to someone who's kind of wishy-washy or don't know what they're talking about, it's fire. Yeah, you might want to question it a little bit more, about who you're working with.
What are some of the questions that people can ask breeders in order to make sure that they are ethical breeders?
Yeah, ask them flowering times, ask them kind of what you see in phenotypical expression, stuff like that, or the parent lines, the parent plants, what they bring to the table, and other questions hey, you got the report for the lab report on your negative hop latent viroid tests, stuff like that, asking for tests and just asking them about their process, just asking more questions is definitely a good thing to do because, there's lots of great pictures and stuff online that you can just, this is a banging plant, but it's okay, what's it truly expressing? What's truly coming through? You know what I'm saying? So just asking more questions about what you're getting, and those lab reports and just, all kinds of stuff like that. Ask more questions. Don't just look at the picture and be like, fire, that's it, yeah, let me get that, So do a little more research on what you want. Know kind of the terpene profiles you like to go after too, that's something. So those are a few things I can think of. So testing your mother's stock, just asking more questions, asking them their process on what they look for in plants or what they're seeing in the progeny. So stuff like that are all great questions. So
okay, awesome. Now you mentioned one of the things you shouldn't really do is just create a cross and then send it out. Are you talking F1s? I know some people say you shouldn't be selling F1s at all. F1s shouldn't ever be on the market. That's just their belief. Others say, no, F1's perfectly fine. Want the initial cross, send it out and have the consumer find what they're looking for. They have a variety there to choose from. What's your take on F1s, selling F1s?
Man, I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think, you can go a couple different directions. Is, you make some one-off crosses. If you're making, you're making a seed line, right? You got the Chill Out OG. You're going to refine it, bring it to F4 or whatever. Okay, well, maybe you like the grape gasoline cut that, you know, maybe I send you and you grew that out. We'll throw that in there with it, you know, cross it to a couple other things and see what comes out there. But yeah, F1s can be sold, definitely. One-off crosses, there's nothing wrong with that. But there's also working lines, which is like refining it further, you know. So if you're refining something further and kind of focusing your energy on a certain cross, you should still cross to a couple other things, because the amount of work you put in isn't going to guarantee that your seed line is going to sell out. You know, it's not going to guarantee that at all. So it's like, you can put in years of work. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to charge a higher price or none of that. So, like, it's good to be focusing and refining on things and working lines. But it's like I said, real estate's limited, especially if you're a smaller breeder who doesn't have, like, huge facilities. So, you know, you focus some attention and work some lines, but then you also just have some one-off crosses that people can just select their phenotype from, because, you know, a lot of these are all polyhybrids anyway, so there's going to be variation in the phenotypic expression. So, yeah, man, I think that's still a good thing. You can still sell F1s, just as long as you're not just, like, sending them out without, like, any type of testing, or if you're selling them without testing, be upfront about what you're doing and have a price point that matches it, you know what I'm saying? And or send out testers. Like, if they support you and buy packs, then send out a tester packs with what it is, you know, and you start getting some feedback out there. Plus, if you run some, now you have a little more to go off of, you know, when you release these. So, like, I got my Trop Cherry line, so it's like six different crosses, but like a couple that I'm really into and that are fan favorites is the Black Cherry Bliss. So I'm going to refine that one. I'm going to pheno hunt that one, bring it to F2. People want it already. And but then there's other stuff that I just won't. I'm just leave it as is and move on to another project, because we can only work on so many things. You know what I'm saying? It's always you always got to kind of pick and choose, and yeah, it can be hard sometimes, but well worth it. Well worth it.
You talk about it's okay to sell F1s as long as you're being transparent. Things should be tested. You could potentially sell things that aren't tested as long as you're transparent. I think a good example of that is Robinhood Seeds. So then some people don't know this, but Robinhood Seeds, they don't test.
Exactly.
And they have a little bit lower of a price because of that. And so they're very transparent. And yeah, there are companies out there that just don't test and they send them out, but they're transparent about it. And there are companies out there who don't test and they're not transparent about it. They lie about it and say they are tested and send them out. And unfortunately, there's a lot of problems that happen. Talking about the testing process, you know, after you create those seeds, what do you do in order to get them tested to make sure they're good to go before getting the market?
Well, I have a few close gromies, you know, that I can put the seeds with them and they can grow some out. I'll grow some out, you know what I'm saying? So, and getting some testers out too. So it's just getting some gear out there for people to grow. Plus, you know, we'll be growing it too. But yeah, man, just grow some stuff out. You got to grow it out and check it out. You got to see what's going on in there, you know, before you're offering it to people. So, but yeah, there's a lot of that going on. And going back to Robinhood Seeds and Square One Genetics, same guy does both of those. Square One Genetics obviously is the more high-end, higher-priced stuff. Robinhood Seeds is a little bit lower. Now, see, he's doing the same thing as what I'm kind of talking about. He's focusing his attention on certain things, while others, he's like, okay, I didn't put as much time or effort into this. Or, you know, it hasn't been heavily tested or, you know, even tested at all, you know. So he's putting that under a whole nother brand, you know. So, like, and he's being transparent about it. See, that's the good way to do it. So, I mean, big ups to THC Titan for keeping it real there.
He's awesome. I had him on a different podcast. Jeez, that had to have been 2017 by now. Long, long time ago. And great, great conversation. I need to get him on the Garden Talk podcast. I'd like to get him on here because he's a wealth of knowledge. And he's been doing it for, I believe he crossed 10 years now. So he's got a ton of knowledge in regards to that.
Yeah, that's awesome. These are the guys I look up to. I want to, like, work with some of these guys, you know, at some point, you know. And something I'd like to say, too, like, so some of the genetics we cross, like I said, you can get the permanent marker cut. You can maybe get the blue cookies cut, you know. So, like, those can be replicated, you know. But it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, though. You know, like I said, if you're offering some stuff that other companies offer, that's just part of the game. But sometimes you get hate from these bigger guys who are kind of clicked up or whatever. But like right now I'm working on like a Slurricane number 7 line. So I've got a reversal going You know, the S1 isn't the main focus because I'm not really trying to push the S1s, you know, from a guy who's already, you know, selling the S1s. But, like, I'll reach out to them. Like, hey, man, I'm working on this Slurricane line. You know, let them know, like, kind of, like, reach out to them, you know, and let them know what's going on. Like, yo, I'm not trying to step on your toes. You know, I just like to communicate with them, and it can open up the door for opportunity later down the line. But, you know, I'm working on, you know, other crosses. But an S1 was made, and we're going to sell the S1, and we already know it's stable since in-house has released it. So, yeah, we're going to release it. But, like, there's not going to be a lot of them. That's not the main focus. But we also got to, you know, survive as we're competing against some of these huge guys who can just pump out lines month after month. You know what I'm saying? And they're just playing the numbers game on what's going to hit, what's going to make the numbers, and they just keep going. You know what I'm saying? So the Slurricane number 7, there's lots of guys who haven't got to even run that. You know, I think California and a lot of those breeders and stuff, they move so fast through stuff that, like, that's such old news to them that I don't really feel that that's really stepping on their toes. But still going to reach out and just let them know that, hey, you know, I'm working on this. I got some S1s, not the main focus, but, hey, you know, would love to, you know, even collaborate with you sometime, or, you know, I'd even put money down just to support that breeder. Like, yo, you know, I'm supporting your work type thing. So.
Got it. I want to get into pollen chucking next. This is another practice that some say is unethical. Others say it's perfectly fine. First of all, what is pollen chucking, in case there's somebody in the audience that doesn't know what it actually is? What is it, and what are your thoughts on it?
All right, pollen chucking. You're getting some pollen and you're chucking it on some plants. You know, there's no real direction. You don't really know. You're just maybe just kind of seeing what's happening, and you're just crossing it, you know, and you know, there's not much direction. And then, you know, if they're just for you, that's cool. You can hunt through and find your own phenotype. But if you're selling them on the market and you're just chucking pollen, you might not even flower out the cuts. You're like, oh, I just acquired, you know, Gelato 33 or the permanent marker, and now you just throw it into a reversal tent, you know, and pollinate some stuff. Hopefully it's the right genetics, right? You know, otherwise you're going to have some issues. But basically just rushing into just throwing pollen on things, you know, with no direction or real purpose, you know. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, some people might consider some of the stuff we do pollen chucking, you know, because some of the crosses are just kind of one-off crosses. I know both parent plants already, but, you know, that might be considered pollen chucking or whatever. But I think it goes back to, like, your intentions on what you're trying to do. You know, are you just doing it for yourself? You're just trying to, like, hook up with some buddies? You're just trying to find something cool? Or are you, like, packaging these things and putting them to market and, like, saying it's this or that when you don't even know, you know, you didn't even grow out the cut that you reversed onto all the other cuts. You don't even know if it's the right plant. You've never grown it. I mean, yeah, you can muddy the waters real quick going that direction. So yeah, there's a way to do it and there's a way not to do it. And typically pollen chucking is referred to the person who's just chucking it with no purpose, no direction, kind of just doing it. So.
What if they were transparent about it? They're like, yeah, I pollen chuck these, and, you know, I did this cross and this cross. I crossed this with this, this with this, this with this, and packaged them up, put them on market, and, like, you should get this from it. It was a pollen chuck, full disclosure, I haven't grown it out, blah, blah, blah. You know, is that okay in your eyes, or is that just, I think they shouldn't be doing it?
Okay, because it's like certain people are going to, like, steer away right away, most of the experienced people, but then it also depends. What's the price point? You know, are you trying to be like, yo, these are $200 seed packs, dog? Like, this is fire, you know? Or are they like, yo, like, you know, these are $20, $30 packs or whatever, you know, and this is what it is, you know? I don't have the space or the means to do this. I'm just trying to offer something that I think is cool, you know? It's kind of like on a smaller level, you know, of being a breeder, you know, pollen chucker or whatever. So, yeah, as long as you're transparent, it's the guys that really. That irks me, that don't. Like, if you do, I mean, man, big ups to you. Like, you're straight up like, yo, here it is. If you buy and it herms out your whole room, I mean, it says it right there. Like, yo, this is untested gear. Like, this is what it is. But, hey, it's $20 for a pack. You know, you're running the risk. You got to know. And if you're running plants, you already know. You got to be watching this type of stuff no matter what. It could be Robin Hood Seeds, which is untested, or it could be his other brand, Square One Genetics. You could be those plants too. You still got to watch because you never know what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So,
absolutely. Really good point. And that's where stability comes into the conversation as well, right? Well, what exactly, I feel like that term gets thrown around and people, a lot of people don't even know what it actually means, truly. What is meant by a strain or a cultivar being stable?
There's a couple ways to look at it. So there's like sexually stable. So is it going to throw bananas, throw, you know, male flowers and pollinate your the rest of your plants? So is it sexually stable? And also another way to look at it is like phenotypic expression. How stable is that? You know, some people, at least back in the day when stuff was created, like people wanted it to kind of just come out and be like the same as whatever the picture was or whatever. You know, now there's more variation with these polyhybrids and stuff, and a lot of people want to kind of hunt their own and kind of get that variation.
Okay. So it's not so much the stability in regards to, you know, it's different types of herms, right? There's the herms with the nanners due to too much stress, and then there's herms where it's actually within the genetics to where you grow it out, it starts to flower, and you see pollen sacs form at the nodes, right? As far as being able to genetically, say, quote, breed those characteristics out of the plant, is that actually a possibility at all? Or is herms always going to be within the genetics no matter what is done?
No, I mean, well, there's always going to be, you know, life's going to find a way. You know, that's how they preserve themselves. But it goes back to like selecting plants and, you know, working with plants that aren't doing that. So if it's fully herming out, I'm not working with that plant. But if there's a lot of other plants aren't, you know, and I'm running like a nice little number of them, you can see, well, okay, that was like the problem plant. That might just be, you know, the one off, you know, random one. So you just got to keep kind of running plants and, you know, find the ones that don't. You can breed that out. You know, you got to just keep selecting it. But it's not going to be ever completely gone because this is how they preserve themselves. You know, this is built into the plant. You know, you can select and try to breed away from it. But no matter what, like, it's going to be in there, you know, because that's its survival mechanism to, you know, reproduce if there's no, you know, male pollen around or whatever female reverse plants around that are pollinating it. So, like, it's always something to watch out for. But yeah, you can definitely breed it out. It just goes back to selecting plants, selecting the strong, healthy, vigorous plants that aren't showing those hermaphrodite traits, you know, coming out. But it's always a risk no matter what. So whether it's like a $500 pack of the hottest breeder in the game who's running, you know, hundreds of plants and seeing what's going on, still can happen. You know, it's still gonna happen. You gotta watch. So
definitely got to keep a close eye on it. Talking about characteristics, I kind of want to get deeper into what characteristics you look for when selecting parent plants for your breeding projects.
So obviously, like, we want to cater to the market, to, you know, but we also want to be original with what we like. So it's like, there's a lot of hype cuts on the market. There's a lot of stuff always coming out. But so we're going to grow some of those things, but then, like, what's going to really stay in our stable after that? So, you know, we're making our selections from, you know, some breeder cuts, but then also seeds that are popped. So for me, it's like, you know, the terpenes, a big thing is the terpenes, you know, certain terpenes, you know, flower structure, you know, internodal spacing, you know, stuff like that. How much they root? Because if you run a pheno hunt, you'll see like some plants will just suddenly just like be so vigorous and just root out your whole pot, you know, and some aren't. And you're like, oh, that's a good candidate. But then, you know, the terpenes aren't really shown. So it's like, well, it's got the strong rooting. It's got the vigor, but it doesn't have the terpenes, you know. So I like selecting plants with, you know, high terpene content. And a lot of stuff I like is like gassier stuff. I come from a time where, man, we were getting those OG and sour packs back in the day. Then, like, you know, like $350, $400, $500 ounce stuff, you know. And so I like a lot of that. And, you know, with the market right now, it's like candy gas is like huge. I like candy gas, the grape gasoline we got, one of my favorites, you know, and I'm going to keep crossing that into stuff. I'm going to refine it like my Black Cherry Bliss. I'm going to refine that to F2s, but then I'm still going to take that grape gasoline cut and cross it to other like hype stuff that I like, because it's like, it's something I really like. I want to bring that, you know, to the table for other people to experience too. And also taking stuff in directions that other guys aren't taking it, you know, like going back to the slurricane example, I'm not going to copy exactly any crosses they're doing. I'm taking the slurricane number 7 in the direction that I want to take it with the plants that I like. So, you know, the blue cookies, the grape gasoline, just to name a couple of them, you know, so flower structure. I like color, but, you know, obviously bag appeal's big for sure. But overall, just, you know, terpenes. We want some dank terpenes coming out of these flowers. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big one. And with all the new stuff that we're refining, like, I'll be testing, like the different phenos just to get an idea of where the terpene levels are at and the potencies and stuff like that. And then on my selected keepers, rerun those, whatever, the top three, and then send those in for lab tests to see who's scoring the highest, but also the smoke experience of people close to us. So, yeah, those are some of the things I look for. And like I said, it's like what we like the permanent marker. It's a Leafly 2023 strain of the year. Got a hold of it. I wanted to grow it. But before I decided to make seeds with it, I wanted to make sure it was something that I liked. So, you know, ran it. Really like, I like that gassiness that comes in. So we like gas in our terpenes. So I'm definitely going to make some seeds with it. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, gassy terpenes, candy gas, flower structure. The few main, I was kind of going on a few different ones that you can look for, but it's got to have some dang terpenes, man. Love them terpenes. So, and that brings about, you know, the potency too, because it has a synergistic effect. So, yeah, I like my stuff to taste good, you know. So, huge factor.
So it's somewhat of a rigorous process that you put yourself through, and to really find what you're looking for before you're comfortable releasing to the market. So you mentioned testing several times, you know, testing a pheno, then running it again, testing it again, having people you're around do smoke reports on it and stuff like that before you even consider releasing it. And I really feel like a lot of people aren't really taking those steps to do that, that they're just doing what we talked about in the beginning, which is either chucking pollen or just creating a cross and pushing it to market with little to no testing, and really going against everything in regards to ethics when it comes to breeding. So I'm happy to sit down with you and really pull some of these things out of you. And maybe this will inspire some of the breeders and give some of the breeders out there that are cutting corners, give them some ideas for what they can do in order to kind of be more legit, push things through testing, you know, not just terpene testing, but HLVD, right? Hop latent viroid. Make sure that you're not sending seeds out that have hop latent viroid, because yes, HLVD can be in seeds. I don't think a lot of people know that. It can certainly be in seeds, and that's unfortunately a lot of the ways that people's gardens are being infected is through the seeds. So,
and another. Well, I guess we're going to touch on one of those questions I was going to say, but like the clone swapping, you know, that people do too, you know, and
clone swapping.
Clone swapping. Sorry,
clone swapping. Okay, yeah, let's get into that right now. You're talking. You meant something you wanted to talk about. Kind of disease management is kind of what it relates to, and talk all about that.
So, you know, there's a lot of collectors out there and a lot of smaller collectors, which is awesome. I love it. But then these people are, you know, swapping clones back. Hey man, I'll trade you this for that. And you know, they got all the breeder cuts. They got a list of 50 of them, but it's like, you don't know their standard operating procedures for keeping plants clean and uninfected and all that. So like these people are passing them around, and a lot of these growers won't even know like that they even have it, and then they're swapping it with another guy who's swapping with another guy, and then all these genetics are getting swapped around, and you're getting all that grower's problem when you get that clone. That's why we try to just go straight to the top, to like a verified tissue culture nursery, you know, the breeder, you know, like close connections we've made, you know, because I get people all the time, you know, hitting me up like, hey, I got this, I got these, would you be down to trade? I got the Sherbanger 22, you know, all the hype breeder stuff that's going around. And it's like, no, I can't ever do that because, like I said, don't know if it's verified. I really don't know you like that. I don't know your SOPs. You're just swapping stuff around. You're not paying to get your plants tested. It can be kind of expensive if you're, like, getting, you know, a bunch of plants tested. So, like, there's a lot of that, and to be very wary of that because, you know, there's a lot of that going on. You might not even know. And now you infected your other plants that you kept around, and now you send it to your buddy, and now it's infected. And this is just going all over the United States, and it's infecting people's gardens, and, you know, lower yields, you know, and just lower plant health, you know, lower terpenes. So it's definitely an issue that we all need to be more vigilant on, you know, ask more questions, go back to the asking questions. Same with the clones, like, hey, what's up, lab reports, you know? So, like, we have lab reports on some of our cuts. We're about to have our whole spring menu tested, plus our original mother stock. We have, like, you know, mother stock that's segregated from the new additions that are going to drop, going to, you know, test all those. But yeah, man. So you got to be careful out there. Because for me, at least, like now it's getting to the point where it's like, man, this my collection's worth like a pretty penny, I would say. And this is my livelihood, and this is what I need to further create more genetics. So it's like, yo, I got to protect it at all costs. So like the way I treat it and the way facilities treat it and the way people are really doing it is not the way everyone's doing it. Like the common home grower, common, you know, clone holder, you know, genetic collector, however you want to call it. So that's an issue for sure. Be wary of it. And don't lose your collection to, I made a post, don't lose your collection to Carl the Clone Seller or Haley Hoplayton. Don't want to do it. You don't want to do it.
I've had to refuse so many clones over the years. And, you know, the people offering the clones to me, it comes out of good heart, right? They just want to share their genetics. But again, it goes back to me not knowing like what their grow even looks like. You know, is there pests in the grow? Did that powdery mildew? You know, is there any type of disease or pathogen? So I have had to decline accepting any clones over the several years. I mean, I've accepted in the past and took a risk back before I really even knew about all the risks that are involved with this.
Yeah, me too, in the early beginning, you know, and then you start getting more. You're like, okay, now I can't afford to cultivars I have, like, nuh-uh, you know? If you have a special chill-out OG that you want to, like, work further, you don't want to lose that. You don't want that to get infected, man, you know? That's your livelihood. So
exactly. Yeah, it's too risky. It's very, very risky. And even the seeds. I remember I was at MJ Biz, and there was a guy who was just handing out packs of seeds. He was just randomly walking up to people. Here, you want some seeds? Genetics. A couple of my buddies took them. He handed it to me. I just handed it over to my buddy. I'm like, I just don't even want it in my garden because you have no idea if this hoplite viroid in those seeds or not. Maybe if the guy like stopped me and had a conversation, explained a little bit more about it and you know, the practices he did and so on and so forth, they'd be more comfortable accepting that. But for the most part these days, if I don't know what the source is, if I don't know, you know, what the garden looks like, I'm most likely not going to be accepting any clones or seeds from really untrusted sources is what I'd say.
Because you could just be the pollen chucker guy. You just like, you know, he just chucked it all over. He's just handing them out. He just go, you know, you don't know. So
yeah, you know, maybe it's just because he's a small still guy trying to get his name out there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there's
I understand.
A lot of challenges that small scale breeders face in this industry, right? You know, this industry sometimes prioritizes big names and commercialized genetics, right? Talk to us about those challenges.
Well, yeah, we're like I was kind of touching on earlier, you know, we're competing with some of these guys who have like just mega facilities, you know, they're cranking out these seed lines like crazy. So it's like, you know, real estate, having the space, you know, and because, you know, too, if you're making seeds, well, you're not producing in there. It's seeds. You know, if you got mother stock, well, those nutrients and that light and everything, that's not going to produce and stuff, you know. So there's a lot of money that goes into it, you know, to like get the genetics to the people. You know, there's a lot of sacrifice that you got to make for the space that you do, the limited space that you do have, because it comes down to limited space, you know, not having licensing to have like, you know, huge facilities, huge plant counts, all that. So you have to go around it a certain way in order to make it happen. And these guys, like I said, are cranking it out. So it's like, we're only going to be able to release so many per year because like I want to do it right, you know? Like, I'm going to have to get some out to some people, grow them out myself, make sure they're not herming out, all that. It's like, we're not going to be able to drop, you know, lines like that. And like I was telling you earlier, it doesn't matter if you worked on it for this long or for years. It doesn't guarantee that those seeds are going to sell well, all that. So all that time, money, and energy went to really what, you know? And so there's a lot of sacrifices we make, and for the people doing it, you know, more power to you, because I know the struggle of it. So, but I also like that it's like, you know, it's touched by me. It's like what I want to bring to the table, what I truly like. When some of these guys are just pumping them out, like I say, it's just kind of a numbers game. They're just, okay, print market came out. Okay, this came, Sherbanger 22. Okay, boom, boom, boom. Just pollinate a bunch of stuff. All right, let's run 100 of each. Okay, this one's herm. We're not getting that one. Okay, we're going to release these 6 crosses. Da, 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 da. Well, in order for us to get to that point, it's like a lot more, you know, a lot more time and effort to get to it. So, you know, support those people, because, like, you know, we're pouring our passion into this. It's like, you know, you got to, you know, follow their story and like their selections, it's like more than just like the brand, because it almost like takes on a life of its own once you're at that point. And it's like I said, almost corporatized, where you're just looking at numbers on a sheet. Okay, well, we're going to do the permanent mark times this. This sold well last, so we're going to do this with that, da-da-da-da. And, yeah, that's cool and all, but, like, you know, it kind of strips away some of the passion I feel, or, like, some of the genuineness that can, that, like, what I'm offering, or what other breeders are offering, like yourself, or, and other guys who are just pouring their heart into this, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is our obsession. Like, for me, this is my therapy, my obsession. This is what helps keep me grounded. I love it. I'm not going nowhere, and I'm going to keep forging those networks. Because, like, even in the beginning, man, you know, you have some pushback, you know, from your own mind, your own doubt, your own worry, and then even people around you. Well, aren't you going to need this? Well, like, well, this dude, he's got this and that. How are you going to? Well, I didn't listen to none of that. I just kept pushing forward and expanding and going and going. And you know what? I'm looking back now, and I'm like, I'm so glad I didn't listen to no one. I'm so glad, you know, I've taken this journey. And, you know, I was, like I said, I was working in a warehouse, and I quit, it's not even a year ago, coming up on a year, but basically, I just felt it in my gut, man. It was just like, I was still doing it on the side, you know, but I was like missing out on opportunity because I'm rushing around all day to try to make sure everything's great and taken care of before I go to work. Then I get off work till like 3 a.m. I was working 3 to 11 p.m. So then I'm working till like 3 a.m. doing plant stuff. Got to get up because I got kids, 7 a.m. And man, it was just getting so to be too much. And then sometimes mother stock, like mother health would suffer because I'm rushing around. I'm trying to do too much. Oh, well, now I can't cut clones off of her. Well, now someone's hitting me up for clones. Now I'm missing out on that opportunity. And you know, these warehouses don't pay that much. I don't have to really say for you to get the idea. So I'm like, man, if I just put my full effort and attention into this, I know I can make that money because I'm missing out on money because I'm here at this place, maybe clearing $100 a day after taxes. So it was like a huge leap of faith, and just, you know, I felt it was right. And, you know, looking back now, I'm glad I did. It hasn't been all glamorous. It hasn't been all pretty. It hasn't been all perfect. There's ups and downs, you know, money goes back into the business. You know, I just got a bunch of graphic design done, more labels. That was like almost $800, you know, like, so there's a lot of money that goes into it. It's the testing, you know, having grows for testing your stuff, you know, all that. So a lot of money that goes into it to make it all possible, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm in control of my destiny. You know, I got, like I said, I got chickens, you know, I got my own chickens. I got my own garden, tomatoes, all that. I'm going to be canning my own foods. So yeah, I'm just grateful to be on this journey. I'm grateful to be here talking to you, man. Straight up.
It is really, you know, so much work to do all of it. And you really, it really has to be a passion in order for you to persevere and keep going and get it done. As you know, I have a cross called Chill Out OG, and I started it back in 2019. And this is the only cross I've ever had. You know, it's something I've been working on for several years. And it's a little bit more difficult for me because I'm a small home grower. I have a plant count I have to stay within. So I've done hunts where I threw away everything. I didn't like anything. It wasn't what I was looking for. And then the next grow, nailed it, right? But, you know, grow takes 4 months or something like that, you know, roughly 4 months in order to complete. So it takes a very long time. I'm all the way down F3 now. And really, I probably could be on F4, F5 now, but I'm picky. You know, I'm waiting to get what I'm looking for, what I know is in the genetics that I'm looking to pull out and bring down to that F4 level. So it takes a lot of patience. And
yeah, that's awesome, man. I commend you for going through it, man. And I think when you make your next filial generation, you should throw a couple other plants in there, man. Like, all right, well, here's my refined Chill Out OG, but I also have Chill Out OG to the Grape Gasoline or the Chop Cherry, and you offer a couple more. And I think that is definite value in that. And also, like, you like mixing in the Landrace genetics to it, like, I like that too. Like, there's some guys in the Midwest here killing it with like Landrace stuff, and like I want to like work with them to kind of get something like that too, you know, like a breeder, Khalifa Genetics. He's got like some IBLs, like Lemon Afghan, like and not true IBL Landrace. So like that'd be a great one for you too, honestly, you know. But you got your Pakistan Valley in there, which is kind of a similar thing, pure indica, right? So yeah, so like I want to work something like that into the genetics too. But yeah, man, it's a lot of work. And you have all those mixed phenos, you know, even if you're gifting out the product, you know, it's not always ideal when you have all these mixed phenos and like, yeah, well, this one has no smell to it. And this one, you know, you're spending all that time and it's like, now you got some smoke that you particularly might not, you know, prefer, or it's decent, but it's just not hitting the mark. Like if you filled it with like a breeder cut that you know is going to perform and give you the potency yield and the terpenes you're after, but it's like, instead you're putting that into your breeding projects where it's like, you're not trying to yield probably, you know, you're just trying to see expressions and so all the money and time that goes into that, you know, it's definitely a lot of work. It is a lot of work. It is not for the faint hearted. You do got to like have some true passion in order to pursue this straight up. So
I completely agree. Now there are a lot of folks that are getting into breeding, right? They're brand new. Maybe they're doing their first cross, or maybe they have a cross already and now they're working on more. What advice do you have for those who are on their first or second round of breeding?
Man, I would say just build that experience, because it's like, you know, when you cross something, you might be like, wow, well, this plant dominated the cross. Wow. Well, you know, I'm going to use this with this then, because if I want that to come through, well, the genetics aren't going to mix the same. It might be the opposite now when you cross it to that plant. So it's like, you know, stuff like that. Just get the experience. Just keep going. Keep running plants, because, you know, that's what gets you better. That's what gets you to the point where you kind of know what you're talking about and kind of know what's going on with the genetics. And knowing the plants you're working with, you know, like I said, like, just because permanent marker is hot doesn't mean you should just get it and pollinate it. Well, if anything, get it, grow it. You're going to be way behind these guys who are pumping out the seed lines. That's another struggle, you know, like getting that cross out, you know, right away, like it ain't going to happen. But, you know, cross it or grow it out. See if you like it. You like it? Okay, well, I like what this brings to the table. I know what this plant does, what it's like. So now you kind of know what to expect, you know. So definitely know your parent plants, you know, because that's something that a lot of people don't always do, you know. So they don't know, like, what are they looking at, or if they like it, or, oh, does this one lean this way? So knowing your parent plants is huge. And go with your heart, man. You know, like, I understand we got to keep the lights on and stuff. So, like I said, focus your attention on certain things, but, you know, make some other stuff and just keep growing, man. Just keep growing. Keep experimenting. And don't ever think you know it all, because I feel like with this, you can just keep going. It's like never ending. But and be transparent, be genuine, because that'll shine through. That'll shine through, man. So be genuine, transparent, and go in the direction that you want. Like we're going to be making hype stuff and crossing hype stuff, but we're taking it with the cuts we like, directions we want to take, and for the most part, stuff that hasn't been made yet, you know? So, yeah, that's a couple things I could say.
I think that's a lot of good advice and really a lot of good information this whole episode. You know, this is something that we haven't really talked about in this podcast, ethics, you know, some of the controversial topics when it comes to breeding. So thanks so much for sitting down with me today and talking about these things. Let's wrap things up. Can you tell the listeners how they can find you and what you have upcoming in the future?
All right. You can find us at Elite Cut Genetics on Instagram, but we also have a website dropping soon. It should be done, maybe even by the time you post this, where we'll be able to take the card payments and all that. So that'll be dropping soon. So if you follow the Instagram, you can hit us up there, email us, there's the information, and just stay tuned for the drop of the new website. And we have our Trop Cherry feminized line, 6 crosses, including the S1. But so that's been released, and one that we're releasing, just waiting on the packaging, so hopefully it wanted like a 420 drop, but you know, within this next month is the Jungle Cookies, which is a cross of Blue Cookies and the Jungle Cake. And the Jungle Cake is Wi-Fi 43 to Wedding Cake. And if you know Wi-Fi 43, that was hunted from over 500 seeds by the Jungle Boys at TLC Collective from OG Rascals Whitefire OG seeds. So over 500 seeds were popped, you know, and that was the one selected for that. We used to have that. So I have a cross for my Trop Cherry line with the Wi-Fi 43. But so yeah, the Jungle Cookies, that's going to be the new drop. And then the Slurricane line will be coming out. First will be the S1. No, it's stable, so we're releasing that right away while we start getting some other stuff in testing and giving out some freebies of those to people. So, you know, get them some gardens right away. So, yeah, you can find me there. Email us at elitecutgenetics@gmail.com. And stay tuned for collaborations and more. There's definitely going to be some collaborations with some even more established breeders in the game. So, yeah, and there's a lot of guys in the Midwest killing it. So the Midwest, Chicagoland, we're bringing it. We're bringing it. And thanks for having me on, man. I'm so glad I got to have this conversation, man. I've honestly thought about this for a while, and it's awesome to be on here and speak my truth, because I knew I could come on here and have this conversation. And you know, you can feel, you're not there with me, but you can feel it. I know you can. So I'm hoping your viewers do too. And check us out. We got some fire clones, we got clones on deck and seed packs. Check us out. Elite Cut Genetics.
Well, I'll definitely have a link to your Instagram down in the YouTube description section below. And if you're on one of the audio platforms, just search for them. You'll find them. Josh, once again, thanks so much for coming on here today, dropping some knowledge bombs when it comes to ethical breeding and so on and so forth. I appreciate you, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, Chris. Thank you so much, man. I want to see some chill out OG crosses to like some, you know, grape gasoline or some of this other stuff. Throw it in there. Throw a couple in there, man.
All right. I'll get something going. Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.